Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 311 of the Self-Sufficient Hub podcast. I hope you're all safe and well. I'm taking a break from our usual scheduling this week because of the news that we're all seeing about the invasion of Ukraine by Russia. And it has really moved me. And I mean, there's not a lot for me to say on the matter because, you know, for several reasons. When the pandemic first broke out, I made a point of this not becoming a pandemic podcast. And I don't want that to be the case here either. You know, that's not why you come here. You come here to talk about growing your own food and matters of that nature. But at the same time, or actually not at the same time, but you know, to bolster that sense, you know, also this is a place, a sort of safe space to not have to worry about what's going on in the world sometimes. And I understand all that and I don't want to take that away. That having been said, you know, I think it is relevant to all of us and it's something that needs to be touched upon. And I want to say that I will be donating all of the proceeds for this podcast, all of the Patreon subscribers, donations and any other money that happens to be generated by way of this podcast and some of the other things I'm doing online. I'm going to be donating all of that to humanitarian charities that are giving aid to those people that have been displaced for the foreseeable future. That's what I'm going to be doing. And, you know, I mentioned that it's going to affect us all, and it already is here in the UK. And the reason I don't want to go on and on about this side of things is because it just seems so selfish to be talking about how this war of basically a giant bully invading a democratic state in Europe is going to affect me personally. That seems really, really selfish of me. But there are some elements of it that kind of fit into the general theme that we discuss here at Self-Sufficient Hub. So I think they're worth bringing up. You know, we're talking about rises in the cost of fuel, and they're going to exacerbate the rises we're already seeing across the board in lots of other areas, not just fuel. And I think maybe that wider topic is one that I will touch on in a subsequent episode. But for now, you know, I just want to say that all the things we've said in the past about that are relevant. As a result, the bulk of this episode today is actually going to be a re-release of an episode we did before talking about global supply chain shortages, because everything I spoke about in that episode is very much relevant now. But the main message for today is that I wanted to just use the small platform I have to signify my solidarity with the people of Ukraine, and that, you know, I really am moved by the war that is happening there, and there's no other word for it. And growing up in the world that I've grown up in at the age of 44 or 45, whatever I am, you know, we grew up in a world where we thought war in Europe was something we'd never see again. Certainly ground troops invading a European country. And in the background, there's the threat of nuclear missiles. There's the threat of it not stopping at Ukraine. And, you know, there's so much nuanced decision making happening behind the scenes. And I don't pretend to be particularly knowledgeable on all of that. But, you know, I do follow the geopolitical sphere, and I am familiar of, you know, with Russia's seeming backing from, you know, big boy neighbors like China. Until recently, China do seem to be distancing themselves from Russia in this particular instance, which is a huge relief for me. And, you know, but there's no two ways about it. We are in very uncertain times at the moment. So I'm going to leave you with that now. And hopefully we will be able to, you know, not mention this too much in the future. Hopefully this will all settle down. But, you know, my thoughts are with those people in Ukraine. I know I have at least one listener who has contacted me sporadically via email from Ukraine in the past, and that just makes it touch even closer to home for me. And if you are listening out there, just know that the rest of the world is with you, and we wish you all the luck in the world and a speedy resolution to this humanitarian crisis. So that's it. Sorry to start on such a somber note, but I will leave you with that re-release of my episode from when we were talking about food supply chains and general global supply chains and what we can do as individuals to kind of protect ourselves against the whims of them. Thank you for listening, guys, and I'll speak to you again on Friday. Cheers.
Hello, and welcome to the Self-Sufficient Hub podcast. I'm Carl from selfsufficienthub.com, and I'm here to talk about all things self-sufficiency, all things homesteading, and about how we can reduce the gap between our consumption and our production. Sustainability and food security matters.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 99 of the Self-Sufficient Hub podcast. I hope you're all safe and well, and I mean that today as much as I've ever meant it, because today we're going to be talking a little bit about food security in the current situation with the pandemic being what it is. Now, I'm aware that this show is largely a safe space. It's a pandemic-free zone up to a point. And I just want to assure you that we're not going to be getting all doom and gloom today, and we're not going to be specifically talking at any great depth about the pandemic. But I just felt that it is a backdrop to all of our lives at the moment. And with the varying stages that we're all in, we're all living very different experiences depending on where we are in the world. And here in the UK, there's significant talk at the moment of a second substantial lockdown just around the corner, a national one. There's already regional lockdowns, and it feels a little bit to me like in some parts of the country, all the regional lockdowns are basically kind of joining up, and we may be not too far away from something akin to the national lockdown we had back in March. Now, I'm exquisitely aware that this isn't everybody's experience, and if you are living in the United States, for example, depending on where you're living, your experience could be vastly different from mine, and you may have your own challenges with wildfires or riots or whatever may be happening near you. And of course, the backdrop of the pandemic is ever present. If you are in the Antipodes, if you're in New Zealand or Australia, I'd been following, obviously, the national news, and you guys had been a beacon of hope for quite some time, and New Zealand had got to the point where they had basically eradicated the virus, or so they'd thought, or so we had thought, but it appears that in this current world in which we live, where international travel is a prerequisite for all sorts of goods to be delivered, it seems almost impossible for any one country, despite however strongly they may wish to shut their borders down, to actually remain 100% confident in being free of this virus. So I know that Victoria in particular in Australia has recently been through quite a substantial outbreak. And not long before that, you know, Australia was looking like one of the success stories that had got it pretty much right and was kind of following New Zealand's lead in getting it under control. And then, of course, we have all the different countries in Europe as well that I know we have listeners from, and the experiences can be vastly different there. It seems that although we all have this shared experience of living through this pandemic, our actual individual experiences are very, very, very different indeed. But one thing that I think maybe we all have in common is this vast interconnectedness of the food web, the food supply chain that reaches all around the world, and also the impacts upon that that us as individuals can have and us as groups can have. Again, your experience will vary depending on your location and nationality, but I'm sure that most of us listening can remember not so long ago seeing lots of empty shelves at various times and in various sections of our local supermarkets and shops. So today I just wanted to talk a little bit about the global supply chain and food security on a national level. Now, when I say national level, I'm not keeping it to my nation, to the UK. I'm going to talk about various nations across the globe. And I'm going to specifically focus on where I think most of my listeners are based on the feedback I get. So we're going to be talking about the global food supply chain, but we're also going to be talking about it specifically with regards to places like the UK and Ireland, Australia, the US, Denmark, and some other European countries. So there's a lot to think about and dig into here, and I suppose that is the point of the episode today. Thinking about how globally our food is connected is something that we don't always do very often, and obviously, if you're listening to this show, then chances are you're attempting to produce as much as your food yourself that you can, and that is obviously excellent, and it's one of the best ways to insulate yourself against potential shortages. But I think just the way that the world works these days, it's very easy for us not to think very much about where the food that we do purchase comes from. And I'm not necessarily talking about meat here, because meat is something that I think my listeners will be much more clued into and be dedicating a larger portion of their bandwidth towards the thoughts of where it's come from and is it ethically raised, etc., etc. And outside of meat, I think also our fresh produce is something that maybe we consider the food miles on a little bit more. But then as soon as we start looking outside of those fresh items, perhaps it's easier to switch off a little bit and pay a little bit less attention to the food miles that are being done and the interconnectedness of all of us in that food supply chain and that food supply web. So we're going to look at that today. So one of the first things that struck me really when I was doing some research for this episode was just looking at the global map of countries that produce a large surplus of food. And what I mean by that is countries that actually export a large amount of food in trade, or rather a much larger amount of food is exported than is imported. And what struck me was actually how closely correlated that was with my audience. Now, obviously, I get data on where this show is listened to. And as I've previously mentioned, you know, the four main areas are the UK and Ireland, Australasia, the USA, and Denmark. Now, those are also among some of the highest net exporters of food. So these are countries which are producing a lot more food than they consume. Among them are also Brazil and Argentina and Canada and a handful of Eastern European countries, France, Spain, the Netherlands and Denmark, but not any other Eastern European countries. There's a few Western European countries and a few Southeast Asian countries to add to their list, to that list, and one or two countries from Africa, mainly in the southern parts of Africa. But outside those, everybody, or every nation rather, is either exporting only a slight amount of food or are net importers. And the UK is one such country, actually, as a net importer. But it just struck me how there might be a correlation between just the cultures of those countries and how that might trickle down to the individuals, and how maybe, I'm not sure which way round it goes, whether the individuals have a sense of wanting to be more food secure and that trickles up into national policy, or whether it's the other way around and the nation has a policy of prudence and of being self-sufficient, and that trickles down. I really am not sure which way round that would work, but it's just something that did strike me, really, and I thought it was worth mentioning here. Now, one important point to mention against that information is that no one produces all of the food and drink that their residents consume. So even a country that is exporting far more food than it's importing is still importing food. So the United States, for example, even though they are a net exporter of food, they still import 20% of the food consumed by their country. And of course, they offset that against the trade in food going out. So it's not a net cost, but it is still representative of 20% of the food on the shelves coming from abroad. And that's in a country that is producing loads of food, you know, far more in terms of calories per capita than it needs as a country. So food importing is a big deal for pretty much all countries, and a large number of countries, even though they would be able to source and produce some of the food that they're importing domestically, over decades, people's tastes evolve and change, and we live in a global capitalist society now, however you may feel about that. And lots of people's desires are for things that are not available to be grown in their home country. So with that, develops the need for importing food, importing drink, importing produce. So the cost of shipping has come down. So produce that perhaps would have been deemed uneconomical some time ago is now deemed to be worthwhile to ship in. So there are people in lots of countries where a huge percentage of what they eat is actually from abroad. Now, of course, they vary. As I mentioned before, the US imports about 20%, but countries like the United Kingdom, we import around 40% of our food. And if we want to get smaller than nations and we want to look at specific parts of nations, in particular, a great example is Hawaii. So Hawaii is part of the United States and they import 20% of their food, but Hawaii imports 92% of the food that they consume. So 20% is really a small figure. There are a few countries that import less than 20%. So the US is definitely one of the examples that would be considered to be extremely self-sufficient, as would Australia. Now, Australia produces 207% in terms of calories what it consumes. So for every 100 calories consumed in Australia, it is producing 207. So that's another country that is producing far more food than its population is going to consume and exports a lot of it. But of course, because of the way the world works these days, it also imports a lot of its food.
Hi guys, I'm just very quickly interrupting the show to say please consider supporting it. If you'd like to consider supporting this one-man operation, there's lots of ways you can do it. One of the easiest of which is just to talk about it, to share it online on your social media pages or with friends. By growing this audience is one of the best ways that we can actually ensure that the show is sustainable. If you'd like to support it more directly, then please consider becoming a patron. You can do so by going to patreon.com/selfsufficienthub. By becoming a patron, you help me to achieve things that I'd love to be able to do in the future, such as buying better equipment to increase the quality, allowing me to pay myself some time to spend on the podcast, again increasing the quality of it, and also paying for things like transcription and show notes. If you would like to do that, please do consider going to patreon.com/selfsufficienthub. Thank you. Everything you do to support this show is really appreciated.
Now, of course, at the other end of the spectrum, we have the individual and the individual's choices. Of course, right at the top, we have our global supply chain, and below that, our national infrastructure and our national choices and decisions and position within the world and what our own nations choose to do with regards to its own food security. But at the other end of the cell, we have ourselves. And
Of course, next up from that, we have crowds, because the two seem to function completely differently. If each individual were left to their own devices, I'm sure that we would never have seen the sort of shortages that we saw in the supermarkets back in March here in the UK and at various times throughout the year around the world. It's the knock-on effect of panic buying, predominantly, which is what's caused a lot of them. Now, obviously, there were supply chain issues and there were issues with long-term procurement of certain items and certain foodstuffs. But the problem was exacerbated by panic buying. Now, what I'm going to suggest you do is just take stock of where you are now. And at the moment, there is no, at least where I am, obviously I can only speak for the position here, but there's no immediate crises on the supermarket shelves. There's no food shortages and everything seems to be pretty close to normal. Occasionally there's a few things that are a little bit low, but generally speaking, things on the shelves look much like they would pre-pandemic. That might not be the case where you are, and if that's the case, then I feel for you, I really do. But what I'm going to suggest is that we all sort of take stock of where we are, and it starts with what we do for ourselves, and just make sure that you're in a position that you can carry on growing everything you want to grow, and you can carry on feeding all the animals you may have without having to run to the store tomorrow. Try and make sure you've got a few weeks at least up in advance of everything you might need. Now, I'm including things like seeds in that. Obviously, the best thing to be able to do is to save your own seeds. But if you're looking at buying seeds for next year, then perhaps buy them now before everyone else is thinking of buying them. Because one thing this last year has proved beyond a shadow of a doubt is that you can't rely on normalcy. You just can't rely on things continuing as they always have. I don't mean to sound like the prophet of doom. I certainly don't feel that way. I feel quite comfortable and secure in my own personal long-term ability to provide. I just would like everyone to be in the same position. I'd like everyone to feel that way. Now, we've already bought all of our seeds for next year. And I obviously am hoping this doesn't happen, but if there is another lockdown and the timing of that lockdown happens to coincide with spring next year, then there will almost certainly be a run on seeds again, because where I live, everybody suddenly thought, I'm going to need to grow my own food, and there were literally no seeds on the shelves. This was coupled with the fact that a lot of the seed suppliers deemed to be non-urgent required staff were basically told to stay off work unless they absolutely had to go to work. And a lot of the deliveries weren't coming through. A lot of the seed companies temporarily shut down at the same time. And we can't guarantee against this happening again. So just make sure that you're always ahead. Don't wait until you run out of something to get it. Try and have a little bit of everything you need, everything you deem to be a necessity, stored. So toilet paper is a great example. It's the first thing that ran out on the shelves. Try to make sure you've always got a few weeks in your house. And then should the worst come to pass and there be another panic, you're not going to need to be part of that panic. And that is going to serve two functions, and they are so important. The first is you're not going to need to worry. You're not going to need to go and grab all the things that you're going to need because you've already got them. And the second one, and this is so important, if more people did it, there wouldn't be that panic. There wouldn't be that run on items at the supermarket, because everybody would think, oh my goodness, or rather all the people who hadn't planned, who hadn't prepared, would say, oh my goodness, I need to go and get items X, Y, and Z. But when they get to the supermarket, all those items are fully stocked because the number of people seeking them out and panicking is reduced. And that really is what saves that second panic. And that's when things really set in and get a bit deeper, when people start hoarding through fear of not being able to get something. So by already having a small amount of everything you need to keep you going, then you're never going to need to panic about having to go through those hoarding thoughts and worry, and adding to the problem as well by being one of the people who is buying more than you need because you left it too late. And I'm not judging. I'm not trying to, you know, have a go at anyone. I'm just trying to help. I'm trying to help everybody be that little bit more prepared so that should the worst come to the worst again, then the knock-on effect is that little bit of pressure relief in the stores and on the supply chains, because everybody was thinking ahead and isn't in the position where they're having to panic buy. Now, here in the UK, we have the rather unique threat to our food supply chains of Brexit. This is just added on top of the other issues that we are all sharing. So this does serve to amplify any potential problems that we may have here in the UK. But the rest of the problems that are being amplified are ones that we all face. And these are chiefly COVID-19, which has led to, well, as I said right at the outset, we've all got a very different experience of it. And because we're all so interconnected and the food supply chain globally is so interconnected, then we're going to, over time, feel the ripples and the filter down effect from the different places all around the world that are growing our food. Whatever it is we think that we are relying on from outside sources, that's coming from other countries, and they are at the whim of this disease and their government's policies, just like we are. So there are going to be lockdowns and there are going to be disruptions all over the world. And this is a situation that is going to carry on for some time, certainly for some months at least. So whether it's things like rice growing and rice harvesting that is hit, whether it is more locally and nationally, things like meatpacking plants, which have proved to be particularly susceptible to outbreaks, with a large number of reports from both the US and Germany of meatpacking plants being shut down due to massive spread of the virus, leading to a knock-on effect in the food supply chain, or whether it's simply things like harvesting of regional, locally grown crops in warmer climates that then get spread all around the world. Think things like coffee or bananas or whatever it might be. I mentioned bananas there. I actually think quite a lot of our bananas are grown in Ireland, which is not known for its warm climate. But nonetheless, you get the point. So the idea is just to build resilience into your own system. And when I say building resilience, what I really mean is making sure that there is slack in your systems to pick up any shortfall that may come from somewhere else. So when we're talking about resilience, we're talking about things like eating seasonally. We're talking about growing as much of our own food as possible. We're also talking about just having spares of things. So growing more than you need of the things that are super easy to grow where it's possible. Having spares of things stored, storing more than you need. We're talking about preserving, but we're also talking about things that we might purchase. Just making sure that we have that little bit of slack in the system ready for us to take up as and when we need it. On top of the COVID-19 situation, and here in the UK, Brexit, we also have climate change. Now, climate change is really real. It's actually happening. We have had one of the worst wheat harvests this year that we've had for over a decade. And of course, this has an effect on wheat prices. And the reason for that is the seasonal changes. We are tending to find that we're having warmer, drier winters and wetter springs and autumns and a much shorter dry period in the summer. This has been a trend here in the UK for a little while, and it's definitely having an impact on our grains. So that's just one example. The climate is changing everywhere. So everybody is facing different threats to their growth of crops. They're facing different situations in which they're having to manage and adapt. And every time we need to adapt to a change, then particularly if we're in a rigid system, like a large factory farming system, then those changes are very, very slow to come into effect. we have the advantage as individuals that we can effectively spin on the spot. We can react very, very quickly to changes, not just in climate, but to in anything else. And we can adapt very, very quickly. We can make the decision to change what we're going to sow tomorrow, tonight. We can make that decision in an instant and effectively change our future. So take the time to have a little bit of a think about where you sit in terms of your food security. Have a little think about where your personal country sits insofar as its food security, and spend a minute to do a bit of digging and think about what things you might run out of and plan around it. A little bit of planning now can save a lot of headache down the line. That's going to wrap up today's show. I do apologize if it was a little bit depressing, if it was a little bit less upbeat than normal, but I think that they're important topics that do deserve some of our thought. So that wraps up episode 99, and on Monday will be episode 100. I've got a kind offer from Mike Koopman, who runs our Facebook group, and he has been a guest on our podcast a couple of times. He's actually going to come on and he's going to be asking me the questions for our Ask Me Anything episode on Monday. So I'm really looking forward to that. We're going to be recording that over the weekend. And then next week, we have got lots of exciting episodes coming up as well. We've got the Ask Me Anything episode on Monday. On Wednesday, we have the second part of my interview with Mike and Alan from the UK Homesteading, the Urban Homesteading UK podcast, which is a podcast I highly recommend you check out if you're into the sort of things you must be into to listen to me. Then you're going to be into them as well. It's just great. I absolutely love it. I really look forward to it. It's slightly less prolific than this one. We started around the same time, and I think they've released maybe 6 or 7 episodes. They do about one a month, but they're just a couple of laid-back guys talking about growing their own food and raising bees and things like that. It's fantastic. I really do highly recommend it. So go and check them out. And then next Friday, I have got a root cellar episode, which is a request from someone on our Facebook page. So that will be Friday's episode. With that, I will leave you guys to it. Stay safe, stay well, and I will speak to you on Monday.
This episode of the Self-Sufficient Hub podcast was brought to you by our patrons. You guys are awesome. If you'd like to support the show, there's lots of ways you can do it. The easiest of which is just to like and review it wherever you get our podcasts. You can also tell somebody about it, whether that's on social media or just face to face with a friend who you think might benefit from it. But however you support our podcast, we really, really appreciate it. If you'd like to become a patron, please consider doing so by going to patreon.com/selfsufficienthub. However you support the podcast, it's listeners like you that make all of this possible. Thank you ever so much for listening, and I'll speak to you really soon.